Wall Street stirs up a wave of worry.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon in for Jeremy Hobson. So what would you expect after a 500-point slide on Wall Street? You might, after all, expect the rest of the world to react like this. After a massive sell-off across Asia, London has tumbled a little more than 2% at this hour. Frankfurt has recovered a bit, but it's still down just shy of 2%. Paris is the bright spot, down but just a quarter of a percent right now. Let's take a step back and assess what's going on here. Analysts are blaming European debt, U.S. slow growth, and all sorts of other things. But the 500-point plunge in the Dow yesterday has everyone asking, why now? Joining me live now is Marketplace's Gregory Warner. So, Gregory, I put that question to you. Why now?
So, of course, everyone's asking this question. You watch your 401k dribble down. You want to know why. And the answer you read about in the newspapers and you hear about on the radio is fear. Fear of a soft economy, fear of a slow turnaround, poor jobs numbers, a credit crisis in the Eurozone, everything. But as David Hefty of Hefty Wealth Partners reminds us, none of these fears arrived on the scene yesterday.
We know about all the major stories, right? We already know about debt in Greece. We already know about the debt problem in the United States. I mean, none of this stuff's new. But the markets have always gone up. So we always had to come up with some reason or a lie of why the markets actually rose.
Now, he calls it a lie because he says the market is now correcting for that false optimism, but more optimistic analysts argue the opposite.
But here's the thing. Can we pin down what investors are afraid of?
Well, remember, investors aren't really trying to guess where the economy will go, but where the markets will go, and that's not exactly the same. Here's Lawrence White. He's a professor at the NYU Stern School of Business.
I mean, the markets are always trying to anticipate what's going to happen tomorrow, but also trying to figure out what do other people think is going to happen tomorrow.
So he says it's not that millions of investors all decided yesterday that, okay, time to panic about the economy. It's more like a lot more people thought that others might panic. The thing we have to fear is the fear of fear itself.
Uh-huh. Marketplace's Gregory Warner, thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
So here's what to brace for next. The all-important monthly payroll report from the government. Ready or not, those numbers come out in the next hour, and economists are thinking maybe 80, 90,000 jobs were added last month. That would be more than in May and June, but still not nearly enough to push the unemployment rate down much. It's now over 9%. So where are policymakers in Washington focusing their job-boosting hopes? Foreign trade. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
President Obama started talking jobs right after the debt ceiling deal this week. He wants Congress to pass pending free trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Boost exports, he says, and U.S. companies will hire more workers to produce those goods. Gene Shaheen, Democratic senator from New Hampshire, would like Congress to do even more to create jobs.
Get an infrastructure bank for roads and bridges. Support job training.
But with budget cuts coming, more government spending is probably a pipe dream. So Shaheen backs trade deals, too.
This is an opportunity that doesn't cost a lot of money.
Spend a bit to help businesses that want to export more, and you're done. Will it create jobs? I asked Jeff Schott at the Peterson Institute.
In terms of the overall U.S. economy, it's not that big a deal. But when you have such a large amount of unemployment, every little bit helps.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says 380,000 jobs are tied to the free trade deals. That's just a fraction of the 8 million lost in the recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Reputation.com, protecting online privacy by removing your personal data from the Internet and stopping unwanted email. Reputation.com.
Well, provided you can find a job, it's no surprise you'll probably make more if you've gone to college. That's nothing new. But a report out today from the Lumina Foundation finds the college payoff is getting bigger, despite the higher price. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
A worker with a bachelor's degree makes 84% more over a lifetime than someone with just a high school diploma. Lumina Foundation President Jamie Marisotis says even at its most expensive, college still pays.
Unemployment rates are much lower for people with college degrees, and wages are considerably higher. So from a variety of different perspectives, getting a college degree is now more important than ever.
But the payoff isn't the same for everyone. African Americans and Latinos with master's degrees earn less than the average white person with just a bachelor's. Georgetown University's Tony Carnevale co-wrote the report. He says the conventional wisdom is that blacks and Latinos go into occupations that pay less.
But what comes through here very strongly is, irrespective of the occupation, there's a difference in earnings that we can't account for.
Skeptics of the idea that everyone should go to college say there won't be enough high-skilled jobs for all those graduates. But Lumina's Marisotis says educated people help create jobs. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally this morning, you know things are getting bad when a bank essentially hangs a sign on its door that says, "We don't want your money." One bank just announced it's going to start charging its biggest customers a fee, a little more than a tenth of a percentage point, to stash their big wads of cash. Now, we're talking deposits of more than $50 million. The Bank of New York Mellon handles lots of very big accounts as banker to many big financial institutions. But still, isn't it kind of weird to be charging your best customers because they're depositing too much dough? Note to you big investors, I've still got some space under my mattress, and I promise I won't charge you a penny. Hey, who are you going to trust, me or a bank that wants to charge you to take your money? I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Covering the economy is a 24/7, 365 kind of thing. So every Friday, we get a little help from our friends.
We were sinking fast, and we had no idea whether the world was coming to an end or not.
Oil goes high enough, people stop driving, they stop buying cars, they stop going out to eat.
There are bumps in the road, but consumers are starting to feel better.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Weekly Wrap, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.